Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I take what you made, but I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I can't quit you, babe, but I got to put you down for a while.
Hello, everyone. I'm Patrick Connor, and welcome back to another episode of Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. Man, last night was, it wasn't quite on the level of like an Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua type of, energy being injected into the boxing sphere, as it were, but it was definitely, it added some excitement to our lives, no question about it. In just a moment, my buddy Bryn Jonathan Butler is going to be with us. We're going to be talking some Pacquiao Thurman. We're going to be talking about the rest of that pay-per-view card. We'll see if Bryn caught the earlier fight card from DAZN and the earlier card as well from Fox, PBC on Fox earlier yesterday. But the big talk of the day is Manny Pacquiao's win over Keith Thurman. Now, one of the things I said in the episode description is Manny Pacquiao didn't exactly turn back the clock, and I don't think he exactly turned back the clock. You know, he wasn't too far from it, but, there were glaring stamina issues, there were glaring weaknesses and whatnot, but this is something we've known for a while. We've been following along as Pacquiao has been declining due to age, et cetera, et cetera. But, man, let's get Bryn's take. What up, dude?
That was a tough night, man. Tough to be humbled like that when somebody like Mike Lee is able to knock out a world champion, and all the heckling that we've done against him, we get exposed as being sort of fraud, trying to speak with authority about this game.
I suspected it the entire time, but I did feel some peer pressure from you, like on your part, to get me to really go in on Mike Lee. So, I mean, I did it because I thought you wanted me to, but, you know, now I know better.
It's just really hard when a guy like that is willing to put it all on the line. He's willing to forego Wall Street. He's willing to forego all of that incredible promise of what he was able to achieve in Notre Dame and put up the IBO, white privilege, Jared Fogel, Subway, super middleweight championship of the galaxy. And
well,
to see that happen, it's hard.
Well, I just want to – I'm really thankful that he's able to take that belt that he won back to Stan Gable and the rest of the Alpha Betas at Adams College there from Revenge of the Nerds.
Absolutely.
Because I really just – I was afraid nobody would get that fucking reference, so I had to, like, you know, posthumously, like, inject – oh, that was from Revenge of the Nerds, by the way. I was afraid that would just go right under. Man, Mike Lee, dude, God damn it. How much press has been devoted to this guy? How many tape recorders have been flipped on in this guy's face? How many like commercials have actually gone into like actual production for this fucking guy? Come on, dude. God damn it.
And that's my only issue. I was scolded by Andre Ward on social media, who's just like, don't lay into the guy while he's down. I've laid into him while he's up. I've laid into him when he's had every conceivable advantage.
We're just laying into him, period.
Yeah, I am laying into him. I don't really designate anybody where I want to lay into them publicly except him, because it pisses me off how many fighters have to take so many more risks in their career and their lives to do what they're doing, to earn enough money to support their families. And this guy gets every advantage, is totally padded, which – on the surface does not completely offend me as much as the way he treated it as I've earned it. I am this good a fighter. I'm a championship level fighter, and on and on and on. That's where all of a sudden it's like, I'm against you and I'm going to favor you getting exposed like he was. That's my deal.
And it's akin to Kellen Winslow Jr. a few years back with the, I'm a fucking warrior shit. Like, dude, you got hit by like the weakest hit on the face. I mean, whatever. I'm not an athlete, okay? So I'm not a warrior either. But, you know, there could have been some other fighters on this card other than Mike Lee. There could have been somebody else getting that opportunity. But
he did nothing
to
earn it. That was my thing. He did nothing to earn it. Who is the notable opponent that he fought to earn a shot against Plant. There's no, I mean, like, I don't know what the cumulative record is of his opponents, but I mean, it's just laughable how many opportunities this guy has had to succeed, and he's taken no chances to do anything. And just the air that he presented himself with was, I am just for having not fought a champion, I should be treated like a champion. I totally deserve all of this. And it just drove me crazy. So,
well,
you know, I've got it out of my system now.
Luckily, we had Manny to bail us out, dude, because seriously, that was not a good pay-per-view. And I mean, almost no pay-per-view these days is good, to be frank. It's just the nature of how they're put together. You know, it always seems as though the vast majority of the money is going toward the main event, obviously. I mean, as it should, but it's like they're not leaving any sort of money or anything else left over for the rest of the card. And then the rest of the card winds up being a bust, but then they wind up putting like a few names on the card. Then there's always some sick son of a bitch on social media who's like, look at this card. It's so great. Look at all these names on it. And then you actually look at it, and then last minute in the last week, like the only other good fight on the card gets yanked from the card. Dude, that was dreadful last night. And so I was thankful that we did not get a situation where Keith Thurman basically danced to a decision or something like that, because I thought that he probably could have done that if he really wanted to, but he did not. And I think also what I had brought up before the fight in my pick was a big part of the reason why he gets distracted. He's not very consistent, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is, Manny stepped up and he got the win. And that basically saved the night for me, because if he had not done that, man, I would have just been lampooning the shit. I mean, I'm still going to lampoon the shit out of the card. It wasn't a good card. It shouldn't be, you know, retroactive, which shouldn't be retconned into a good card because Manny Pacquiao won. It was not a good card. It just so happened Manny Pacquiao won. So happily, you know, I'm happy that happened.
Oh, well, I mean, it's the thing with this drug testing is everybody's like, yeah, let's make it fair. You're putting guys' lives at risk. You need to realistically look at the situation. If you want to have 40-year-old world champions beating guys 10 years younger than them, this is what you need to accept, is banning VADA is the best thing that can ever happen to, like, the senior citizen circuit of boxing. That's how we're going to break all these records. He's the oldest welterweight champion. I think, like, everybody looks at the dark side of using steroids, the impact of opponents. It's not a level playing field or on their bodies. The bright side of it is this feel-good story of Manny Pacquiao now. And I think we should focus on that. Stop focusing on the negative.
Well, I mean, I think that there are
not saying
a few...
he's cheating.
I think that there are a few different angles here, and I apologize if this takes kind of a left turn, but I guess this is what we're here for. We're here to just talk shit, right? But, I mean, okay. If someone were to ask me seriously, like, do you think Manny Pacquiao ever took performance-enhancing drugs? My answer would be yes. I think he did. But the asterisk on that would be, so the fuck has everybody else. That's the asterisk on it, and it's a really important asterisk. So the PED discussion is tainted, because it's already – there's no good faith entering into it, and because there's no realization that, yeah, dude, like, everybody's on this shit. Everybody who can afford to be is on some shit, right? Right. So then you have another testing organization, like the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association, run by Margaret Goodman, who, to my knowledge and from everything I know, is a good doctor, was a good ringside doctor for many years, seemed to be genuinely looking out for the well-being of fighters and doing her best with that. But you have somebody like Victor Conti constantly shilling for this organization. And the organization says he has no association, except for the dude cannot stop talking about it. And he literally pays for athletes to be tested by VADA. That's an association. And on top of that, not only is he doing that, but he's sponsoring his own athletes with his own supplements. Fucking supplements, dude. This guy was like the quote-unquote mastermind behind the fucking Balco scandal. And this guy's in boxing with all of, you know, come on, dude. this whole Vada thing, for that reason alone, I have a real tough time trusting it. But then you also bring up an interesting issue. This is something I've brought up on the show before. It's something that I'll continue to bring up. You look at mixed martial arts and you look at the like the evolution of mixed martial arts and the testing in it and whatnot. You might not be super familiar with it, but again, it's something I brought up. Pride Fighting Championships from the late 90s and early 2000s. Japanese organization with a ton of fucking mixed martial arts monsters in it who never got tested whatsoever. And it was the greatest shit on the face of the planet, dude. I swear to you. If you're into combat sports, this shit was like Japanese style pro wrestling mixed with like the hardest core mixed martial arts you can possibly imagine. It was awesome. And there was zero testing. And that was probably a big reason why it was so awesome. Now, we're going back to boxing and entering into a situation where we know both fighters are consenting to get into the ring and punch each other. We all know better that some fighters are dumb, some fighters are not very well educated, some fighters are being tricked by managers and promoters, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not totally on the up and up to say they're consenting adults. I mean, they are, but they are kind of being taken for a ride. We have to, you know, acknowledge that. But there is no way we are ever going to cover the sport with PED testing the way that it should be. There's no way we're going to ever make a totally level playing field. So it kind of leaves us in a position where we got to figure out what to do. How hard are we going to work toward this? And in my opinion, not that hard. Because it's a situation where whoever has money has the opportunity to take the best shit and to avoid the tests or to skirt around the tests. And that's how it's always going to be. Never going to be able to get away with that or get away from that. So,
I think not just them, Patrick, it's everybody who's profiting off of them.
Exactly.
Why is Mayweather allowed to get out of prison to have a fight? Because of his economic impact to Las Vegas at a time when it was depressed.
Or since we're talking about performance-enhancing drug and things like that, right after the Berto fight, he was allowed to weigh in and then go immediately to go get intravenous fluids. Like, what? You don't get IV fluids unless it's like an emergency, dude. But nobody talked about this. Nobody cared. Nobody did anything. So that's the point, is that like it's just like in real life, just like in society, if you have money, if you have status, you can buy your way out of certain situations. And it's the same thing here. Until that changes, I don't really see that much of a point of going hardcore at it.
Yeah, but I mean, I think again, just your overwhelming cynicism and pessimism is overlooking what's like the biggest home run champion since 1998. What's the amount of home runs he's hit?
Right, I totally see your point, and I agree.
I don't know. I don't care, and I know it's a lot lower than a 270-pound Paul Bunyan, Mark McGuire, dueling it out with a selectively bilingual Sammy Sosa in terms of him giving congressional testimony about his use of drugs. But what I remember was I was 18, turning 19 during that summer when they're dueling. That was fucking incredible, and it saved the sport, and nobody gave a fuck about how egregiously obvious it was that these guys were juiced out of their heads.
And look at what kind of dumb footnote it is on the Pacquiao Thurman saga. You know what I mean? Like, is that going to be going on the Box Rec Wikipedia page? These guys did not do VADA testing for this. Come on, dude. Come on. Anyway, it's a talking point. You know what I mean? Like, it's not really much more than that, especially for a fight involving Manny Pacquiao and Keith Thurman at this point. At this point, it's just something like for people to argue about.
I agree. But at the same time, if I was betting on this fight, as soon as I hear that there's not VADA testing, I bet on Pacquiao. If there was VADA testing, and like, look at the difference of Pacquiao's body, by the way, for this fight, suddenly refocused in a way that you're kind of like, wow, that six-pack suddenly dialed in again. Wonder how that happened. It's not like he doesn't work like a fucking maniac for every fight. It's not like he's, you know, eating differently or anything. It's like when there's legitimate testing, his body and the way he performs looks dramatically different. just like home run totals dramatically change once like a testing regimen is in place where these guys are at risk of losing serious money. And the thing is like boxing, if Pacquiao had been knocked out or you know, had run the table, if Thurman had run the table against him in this fight, think how much less money that the sport is going to make. Now Pacquiao, what, could make $100 million if he fought a rematch against Mayweather, right? I mean, if he wanted to, if Mayweather wanted to, that's on the table. There's several big, you know, if he goes to fight Amir Khan in Saudi Arabia or whatever, huge money. So what incentive is there for anybody who's profiting off of him cheating to go after him, to in any serious way try to provide oversight? There's none. It's exactly the opposite. There's not enough big names in boxing, so they're going to do anything they can to facilitate these guys to have this unfair advantage. And, you know, so it's like a 40-year-old guy who's just, you know, just to hear these narratives just reiterated again and again and again by the media and PR outlets of just, oh my God, it's a miracle that he's able to fight at this level. What, you know, Teddy Atlas on ESPN, whatever supplements he's taking, I want some. Well, talk to Joe Rogan. When Joe Rogan turned 40, he began hormone replacement therapy. He began testosterone implementation because it fucking works. And if nobody's testing for it,
yeah,
that's this fountain of youth.
And that's a yet another angle of this, is that there is an entire industry, basically, of things that literally aren't even on the radar for testing. So, right. I mean, it's... It just becomes, just like I said, kind of a footnote in the fight. And on top of that, you know, focusing on the PED part of it ignores what happened in the ring. And one of the reasons why I had picked Manny Pacquiao going into this fight was, like I had kind of touched on earlier, but, you know, from what I've seen of Keith Thurman, I like Keith Thurman. I think he's got a funny personality. I think he's a pretty fun guy to, you know, watch do things overall. And he's generally pretty fun in the ring, one way or another. He's usually either very talented and plying a straight well, or he's getting caught and he's, you know, kind of turning in an unexpectedly difficult performance against somebody he was supposed to dominate or something like that. You know, that's happened a few times now where he's gotten caught. And so I took those things and was kind of like, all right, we got a Manny Pacquiao, and style wise, you know, he fights in spurts and he doesn't really like being pushed back. And Keith Thurman is not a volume puncher and not a pressure fighter. Okay. So basically we're looking at a situation where Keith Thurman is either going to outbox him, you know, like get caught early, take a shot and be like, whoa, nope, fuck that, I'm boxing. And then, you know, do that to 12 rounds, or he's going to have some difficulty here. And I just kept thinking, as soon as he gets hit, man, like there's going to be problems. He's been hurt to the body real bad, and he's been put down, or he's been, you know, wobbled pretty good before. So what happens when Manny actually lands, even if he's old, even if he's not that fast? We saw that, you know, even an kind of older and obviously not that fast Manny is still really fast. And that's where catches all the opponents, man. He doesn't seem like he's doing nothing. He doesn't seem like he's doing anything gracefully. He doesn't seem like he's, you know, he's coiled at all, and then all of a sudden you're unable to contend with the speed. That's how he's gotten all of his opponents. And I think that regardless of any sort of PEDs or anything like that, there is nothing that's going to replace what's lost. And there's no sort of PED that could possibly, you know, make it possible for a fighter to work hard. You know, even on PEDs, fighters got to put in the work. So anyway, I think that in the ring, Manny Pacquiao also performed. And I think that that's a big part of what happened last night.
I thought he performed brilliantly. And I think, you know, the other thing you left out is Thurman landed some huge shots. He landed a kind of Marquez right hand that just totally disconfigured Pacquiao's face when they showed in slow motion. I mean, his face moved 4 inches from where it was before the punch landed. It was brutal, like some brutal right hands, and he just ate them, like his chin, and as you say, the determination. And I think also, like, just Manny was fighting a really smart fight for the most part. Like, I thought his patience with feinting that allowed some of those shots to get through against Thurman, who's a savvy defensive fighter. I thought Thurman fought a very good fight. I agree that he's not – I wish he was a little more active, even though he landed a few more punches than Pacquiao. I think Pacquiao outthrew him. But Thurman had a few rounds in the middle where I thought he was going to take over the fight. Before that body shot, it looked like Thurman was sort of settling in on catching Pacquiao on the way in. And Pacquiao looked confused for a couple of rounds there, looked tired at a certain point, too. At the end of the round, I thought there was a real chance after Thurman landed a big shot. I think this is round 8 or round 9, where Pacquiao looked really drained for a little bit. But there are just those moments when he sort of, like, punches his, like, bangs his fists together, and it's like, no, I'm back. Like, I'm pissed off now. I've got to come back and win this fight. And you just think, like, Pacquiao's, what, 70 fights now? And over the last 15 years, I mean, so many opponents, brutal fights, brutal beatings he's taken. And he's, I think it's pretty kind of hard to argue that he's not our generation's Muhammad Ali with what he represents in a lot of ways. I'm not saying he is Ali by any stretch, but just willing to fight anybody. They're almost always dramatic fights. And, you know, even though I think there is a big asterisk with steroids attached to his career, and I agree with everything you said before. I think, yeah, they're all taking it because they have every incentive to take it. I'm not saying it's a level playing field because him being a superstar means there's huge advantages that he enjoys that many of his opponents don't. But I just think he's you know, so, just enormously compelling, even at 40 years old, fighting somebody who is a very, very dangerous opponent 10 years younger. And, you know, the idea that Pacquiao still has a few more fights left in him where he can fight at this level is electrifying. Now, that being said, I don't want to see him fight Errol Spence because I think that would be as ugly as Mikey Garcia, potentially. But I would, you know, him fighting Amir Khan, that's going to be a super fun fight. And it's going to make a pile of money if that fight happens. You know, I just think he just has a legacy where I just feel more than any other fighter from this generation, like, look how much he gave to the sport. It's just hard not to view him as one of the most exciting fighters ever and maybe a top 10 fighter all time, all things considered. And this did kind of solidify it. Like, he should not be doing this. Even if he is juiced, this should not be happening. Like, the level of competition he's facing and how well he's fighting and that body shot, the knockdown. I thought the camera work by the PBC was just deplorable throughout this fight. I never saw their feet with that first knockdown, so it was never clear. Did he step on his foot when he knocked him down? Like, I found like there was the referee was blocking a lot of camera angles during exchanges.
And they kept going back to that. So how are you going to keep mentioning that, but then not have a fucking shot of it, dude? Like, you,
crazy.
Like the commentators are like, but what about his feet? I don't know. It could have been his feet. And I'm like, then shut up.
Show
if you don't have a shot of it, why are you injecting this?
Feet.
Like, yeah, come on, man. It was that added, and sorry to kind of like just butt in and steal what you were saying here, but that really added to the crappiness of that pay-per-view last night, in my opinion. Man, I love Ray Mancini. Like, I mean, come on, it's basically Arturo Gatti, you know, it's Ray Mancini, but, dude, he speaks like I speak, almost. Like, I have a tough time sometimes with stuttering and getting words out of my mouth, because my brain is just going, boom, 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 and my mouth is like, dude, I can't catch up, and so sometimes I'll, like, because it's like, I'm excited to get something out, but that's literally every, like, sentence for him. He's having difficulty putting a sentence together, and I feel awful watching it, and it's terrible. And I feel awful because I don't want to be like, well, here's this icon of boxing, like, take his job away. But I mean, it's also kind of like almost insulting in a way. It's like getting Joe Frazier in his last 2 or 3 years of life on ESPN on a Friday night fights, and then handing him a pair of gloves and going, hit the bag, Joe. And then you're watching going, please stop, please don't, you know, like,
no.
Why? It's awful. I don't know why they're doing this. And, you know,
the
rest of these fools weren't much better.
And you heard Mancini where he's talking about Andy Ruiz. They bring in Ruiz and Wilder, which is kind of a funny exchange. But to say that Andy Ruiz has the fastest hands of a heavyweight since Mike Tyson, really? That's really where you want to go with Andy Ruiz? Like, give him his due that he got the big upset. Do not tell me that he's an elite world champion who has the fastest hands since Mike Tyson. Yeah,
that's the whole story, is that he's not. That's why it's – come on, you guys.
That's why it's amazing. Right, you're exactly right. Like, it's not that we missed how incredible he is. You know, it's like you've heard that famous story about where he's meeting with Top Rank and Bob Arum is saying to him, you know, we think you've got some talent. Like, you've got an amateur pedigree, but, like, why is it that you're just not realizing your potential? Like, it just seems like it's a focus issue. And Ruiz, apparently, I've heard this from several sources, said, I want to get high and I want to fuck black chicks. That was his response about why it wasn't working out with Top Rank. And I mean, it's, you can't tell that story to anybody without them laughing, but I mean, like, look at the guy physically. Like, he's clearly, boxing is not the priority on a day-to-day basis. It's eating, you know, and yet he fought this incredible fight and looked terrific and good for him. But, like, he is not an elite world champion fighter. He had a great day. He had a great night where he put on that performance. But I mean, realistically, and, like, go ahead and Andy Ruiz, prove me wrong. I think you're a fantastic character and I give you full credit. I was there when you knocked out Joshua and my jaw was on the floor, but I am not anticipating that you are going to, you know, be a dominant heavyweight, a generationally dominant heavyweight, because you have the fastest hand since Mike Tyson. It's just stupid. It's just absurd. And he looks bigger than he did fucking fighting Joshua, like, when they showed him talking to Wilder. Like, he's not in shape. He's not trying to get in shape, make the most of the opportunity. He's going to be like Buster Douglas fighting Holyfield.
I really hope that's not the case. I mean, it was something that I talked about in the immediate aftermath too, because I know that it's part of the narrative or whatever, that he's kind of like a big, you know, cuddly dude and whatnot, but it's just kind of like, all right, well, you did this well like this against Anthony Joshua, dude, if you would come in this much lighter or whatever, you know, imagine what you could be doing with the rest of the division. But, you know, I understand that there's, on some level, that's part of the endearing quality or whatever. But yeah, the broadcast overall was really badly paced, and the talking segments were awkward and took too long. And I know that now, having commentated on a couple local cards now, I understand the process a little bit better than I did before, and I know that it's not easy. So I don't want to just crap on everybody, but at the same time, you know, I'm also not getting paid like 5-6 figures to do this, and these guys are, so, like, they should be a lot better than they are, and this should be a lot better than it is if you're paying this much money for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really struck by, like, how is the PBC not dialed in on how to just present a fight in a way that isn't more consistently pissing me off for how shitty it is than just capturing good moments? Like, just every angle, it was like nobody had tested out anything. Did you notice that? Like, we're kind of floating above the ring at an angle which is just in no way is useful for me to sort of see what's going on. There just is, I don't know, it's just like really, it's just odd to me to see that much money dropped into presenting something and nobody is doing sort of the basic things to just have it be just a professional product as well.
Well, and
I just found it very odd.
For some reason, it kind of like harkens back to when Premier Boxing Champions was first announced. It was like they were trying to do something new. I mean, and that's great. Like, I don't mind innovation or anything like that. I think that it's awesome trying to keep things fresh. And, you know, they brought on, what's that composer? Super good, Hans Zimmerman or whatever. They brought on whoever it was to compose the official PBC music and, you know, blah, blah, blah. They tried, like, these new walkouts down these little ramps, and I can dig it, dude. They tried some new stuff, but once they realized some of that stuff didn't work, they boosted it, and that's cool. But they kept some of these other things that they're trying to do with the broadcast that I don't really understand. Like what you're saying with the weird like platforms and the, you know, the weird setups and stuff like that. I don't know. And on top of that, dude, why do they keep pulling people like Skip Bayless in for their opinions? Because their opinions mean absolutely zero in the world of boxing, much less sports. Like, who gives a shit about what this dude has to say about anything, much less boxing? But then he goes on to the broadcast and says, "Yeah, you know, I'm in a group of people. Like a lot of us, we felt Manny beat Floyd Mayweather." And I was like, "Huh? What?" You know, luckily, whoever that lady was, she seemed like she was looking at him like, "All right, dude, you're going off script." And she cut that segment pretty quick, thankfully. But
it's so embarrassing. No, because it's just a hot take to get. To get him trending on social media.
Stupid.
And it's like clearly just a calculated stupid thing, but it's embarrassing. Like nobody believes that. Who the hell has ever argued that Pacquiao won that fight or even remotely close? Like it wasn't competitive. So it's just, yeah, you're just kind of like, you know, this is detracting from like what people are paying money to watch. Like this is just dumb. It's embarrassing. All of us in the boxing community, we're boxing fans, support Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Like, at least when he's saying his stupid stuff to be enthusiastic about what's going on, I'm not like he's just shilling for something to gain social media traction or whatever. It's just kind of like, you know, it's embarrassing, but it's embarrassing in a way that those of us who love boxing accept certain family members who are kooky and strange. But it's just different when you bring in certain kind of, like, sports tourists to boxing who are really just there to sort of exploit the shine of a name like Pacquiao. And it's just like, yeah, just fuck off. Like, we don't need you. You're looking really strange anyway. Like, didn't he look like he'd aged 25 years from the last time we'd seen him?
It's funny because I'm so used to seeing him from one specific angle, like from like neck up from that front angle, sure. And that's it. And so then they like had this panned out shot and I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Who's this spindly looking fucking Lyle Lovett guy? And realize that it's totally Skip Bayless. And my first thought is Stephen A. Smith, dude, here we go again. Great. Let's do it. Ugh. Come on. What hot take do we have here?
It's just terrible. I mean, the Stephen A. Smith thing, he is to my ears what like some poor tortured dog who's trapped in his yard is just barking endlessly. Because there's just nothing else to do but just bark and to be paid attention to. I just can't stand that man. And Bayless is almost just worse. Like his version of braying against things with a hot topic, a hot take. It's just so tiresome. I don't know. I always felt like just the PBC just has this. You were going back to Revenge of the Nerds, but to me, it's like the feeling of GoBots to Transformers. You just can't help but feel sorry about them. You know, like there's something about the way PBC presents itself, but all I'm thinking is, God, I wish HBO was doing this. I wish they hadn't left this. I miss these guys. I miss nice camera angles and just a nice, clean, crisp broadcast and elevating the sport, you know, using production to make it feel like it's more than it is to, you know, that's to me, the beauty of boxing is it's so intimate and personal on the one hand, but on the other, it brings people together because it grows into something that's so much bigger than it is simultaneously in a way that no other sport really does. And the PBC, it just feels like it felt to me like a kind of like a UFC broadcast. And I've never really liked the UFC thing. Like it just, to me, the UFC feels like I'm in a dungeon watching it, which is like its own thing, and that's cool if people like it, but I don't enjoy it. I like more, like I was having a discussion with the people I was watching Pacquiao with, where it's like, what's your favorite place to watch a fight? And for me, there's nothing like an outdoor arena to watch. Like the StubHub Center is just so wonderful to watch a fight.
Awesome.
It's just an amazing venue.
It's the Dignity Health Medical Cannabis Wellness Medical Park now.
Is that right? That's funny. But I was thinking like the way the PBC films stuff, it just feels claustrophobic. It just feels like I'm in a very small little like high school auditorium. And I'm like, how can you not figure that out? Like what is going on that you don't have anybody in a position of authority to be like, these are the wrong fucking angles, because I was just very, I found consistently every round, like 20 times, thinking, what the fuck is the cameraman doing there, filming it this way?
It seems like a lot of stuff just gets shoehorned in.
Yeah.
That's the best way I could describe it. That they're trying to make up for, like, okay, let me think. I started watching the broadcast. It was right about 6 o'clock. They started the fight at roughly 9, and that was only because, like, they were like almost on a time crunch by the end there. They like sped it up. The rest of the broadcast was like at a super leisurely stroll. So there was very little actual action in this 3-4 hour time slot. And there was so much just talking and kind of, it was so badly paced, man. I don't understand why, you know, there's this tendency to do this kind of stuff. And I don't want to just crap on PBC here, because they're not the only ones with some issues. I totally dropped ESPN Plus personally. And I mean, it has nothing to do with Top Rank specifically, your ESPN. I don't know what it was. It was just constantly a battle trying to keep my Roku from freezing, keep the channel from freezing, etc. But PBC in particular, I think they're really just banking on this style over substance approach, where they're just throwing names out there and having this person on the broadcast, and let's get Danny Garcia up here and see what he has to say. You know, let's interview Andy Ruiz Jr. for 20 minutes type of thing. Some of these segments are good and they produce good quotes and there's some interesting things being talked about, and that's great. You know, there were a couple really funny exchanges between Ruiz and Deontay Wilder, who seem like they kind of like each other. So, or they're like they're friends or something. So, you know, these things aren't useless, and that's not what I'm trying to say. And then, you know, I know you're not trying to pick on Premier Boxing Champions either, but we've consistently seen some of these issues from them. And it does kind of concern me, because some of these things are almost like, I wish that they would have failed a little bit more so that we could have seen the bad things get scrapped. Whereas instead, Premier Boxing Champions is soldiering forth and financially apparently doing fairly well right now. And so some of these bad habits get reinforced. And so that's not to say that I want to see them fail. I don't. I want to see the fighters get opportunities and TV dates and whatnot. And so whatever that is, like, make that happen. However, in the sense that, like, you need to see a fighter fail for the first time to learn. You know what I mean? The same thing.
Yeah.
PBC needs to fail a little bit to learn that, like, you know, just throwing money at this shit is not the way to go.
Yeah, I agree. I just think troubleshooting some of these issues, I think that, and nothing against the PBC, I just think their product is dog shit a lot of the time. For the amount of money they've sunk into it, you know, what are these great legacy fights that we've gotten from it? I think it's just creating a kind of bubble, which is detrimental to the sport. So, yeah, I object to their production values, and I sort of object to some of their principles in terms of my main concern is the health of the sport. What's good for the health of the sport? I like that fighters are getting paid really well, but I also think they're getting overpaid. And once that venture capital is sunk, because they've created a bubble, and increasingly boxing is getting a lot of dirty money sunk into it from either Russian oligarchs or, you know, we're seeing fucking in Ireland, like some of these guys who are sinking money into sport, and then they're moving over to Dubai and everything, and people are getting killed. Like, it's not a good look. It's not a good look sport, for people. Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, but maybe it was about 2.5 years ago or so, there was a shooting at a weigh-in.
Yeah, at a weigh-in. Yeah, the MTK.
And I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that was – I'm not saying this is happening every weekend, but I mean – that was a serious escalation of things in the 21st century, making it look making it look like Chicago in the 1950s or something like that.
Well, and we're talking about boxing becoming, you know, a place for extraordinarily wealthy people to launder their money. And like, it's something with like even the art world, where aside from drugs, art is the biggest unregulated economy in the world. And then it's like, I think when some of these people see boxers like Floyd making nine figures for 12 rounds, they're kind of like, well, what's the oversight in this? What's the barrier to entry to get involved with this? Oh, there's none. Fantastic. I'm in. And some fucked up shit starts happening. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, like the MTK stuff, is not really getting reported on either, despite the fact that, like, these are serious, serious customers. And, like, the one time I covered boxing in Ireland, like, my camera got stolen, my computer got stolen in, like, a targeted robbery that went awry because they were going after Rigondeaux, and instead they, but the stuff they stole from the van happened to be my documentary shit. But, like, I've never been to a fight where, like, even our driver didn't want to go in. He was waiting outside saying, you know, if things go well for your Cuban, there's going to be a riot. And all of Limerick has emptied the traveler population to support their guy. Like, you don't understand how things work here. Like, there's going to be a fucking riot, and people are going to have weapons, and there were cops and riot gear. I had no idea that it was that desperate a situation over there. And, you know, I've met several people in boxing from Ireland. Like, they produce a lot of really good fighters, but it's a little scary. It's a little scary, like, the money behind it that's supporting some of these guys. And they're very nice when you meet them, but when you sort of find out some of the backstories, and it also just interesting to me that just people aren't writing about this. Like, I think journalists just don't have an incentive to stick their neck out to sort of delve into very, very good stories, because it's fucking dangerous.
Yeah. Well, look, my name is Patrick Connor, and we are a lovely people, but we are a scary people sometimes, straight up. We are a lovely but scary people. But, I mean, it's – I've written about this a number of times, and it's something that I – it's no less true now. It's still very true. Boxing is kind of one of the last holdouts, not just in the sporting world and in the world in general, but especially so in the sporting world. Boxing is one of those kind of last holdouts for kind of a laissez-faire, and I don't mean that in, like, the, you know, colloquial sense. I mean in literal laissez-faire, you know, handling of money and influence in the sport, in the sense that you can essentially step in and launder the shit out of money in boxing, and nobody's really going to do anything about it in 2019. Like, you could still be basically operating in boxing as a more or less criminal enterprise in 2019. And nobody's doing anything. Not only is nobody doing anything, but the system is more or less set up to enable it to be that way. Not only to enable it to be that way, but set up in a way that it will be resistant to changing it from being that way.
It's really
the last sport where that's the case. You know, there is no real oversight. There's oversight on kind of like small, minute levels here and there, but it doesn't really have that much of an impact overall. So that being said, you know, it's relating it back to this kind of PBC thing and this, and the health of boxing going forward. It does kind of concern me. And it does concern me that, like, productions like these are, like I said, kind of rewarded. You know, and there's nothing really to – there's nothing going forward. Like, if you're in a PBC boardroom and you're going, you know, talking about what happened last night and you're there this morning, nobody is going to be piping up and saying, man, we got to fix those camera angles. Man, we need to work on this thing because, you know, people were commenting on the fact that Keith Thurman was the guy with the belt, but he was walking in first. You know, that's kind of weird. Fans seem uncomfortable with that. I don't know. Maybe we ought to examine what we're doing. Nobody's thinking that. What they're thinking is, damn, we got a potential big fight on our hands because Manny Pacquiao won. Somebody needs to get Floyd on the horn. That's what they're saying. Nobody's talking about fixing anything. Nobody's talking about, you know, correcting anything. People are talking about what kind of money are we making off this now. And that's the problem. I mean, it is what it is. It's prize fighting, but at the same time, you know, that's really the only aim. So
Well, and just, and I think also just in a more overarching way, the fact that you look at these other sports just at its most basic level, put together the product that people want and supply it. And boxing has a real difficulty getting out of its own way with that. There's so many competing interests that sabotage and shoot the overall welfare of the sport in the foot. Whereas, you know, like, look at this heavyweight picture. Like, okay, the Andy Ruiz thing is great, and I love that we have the first Mexican-American or however he's calibrated. It seems to be like a moving target, but like, the first person of Mexican descent ever to become a heavyweight champion, who's an incredibly compelling character, that's fantastic for the optics of the sport. The sport couldn't ask for a better, more marketable ambassador than having that background, giving the immense support of Hispanics in the United States and Latin America and all over. It's wonderful. Like, that is going to be such a calling card to encourage more kids to get into boxing, to see that, like, this can happen for somebody, let alone a morbidly obese guy who, you know, is now supported by Snickers and has set fitness back 80 years in the country where diabetes is a major problem. But it's, in many ways, it's good. But the idea that Joshua, with his marketing potential, that, like, something like that happens to him when we don't get a chance to see him fight Wilder while they're undefeated, that Wilder, Fury, they're having so much difficulty putting a rematch together. What if if Fury loses his next tune-up fight? Like, this is very rare that you get to have elites at this level where there's so many compelling matchups that can be made. And I think casuals look at boxing and just are sort of like, wait a minute, you've got so many different combinations of things that are so appealing to us. Why are we not seeing this regularly? Why are we not seeing four great fights a year, or three or two, instead of, like, looking ahead 2 or 3 years and people being like, well, maybe it'll happen?
Yeah.
Maybe? It's very, very frustrating.
And one of the remarks that I had made last night on Twitter while watching the broadcast was basically Emily Pendlake is saying, hey, lay off the fats.
I love that he's overweight, but I'm saying, come on, like, you're an elite athlete. This is a very weird optic that you're, like, yeah, you qualify with a body mass index of, like, a sumo wrestler. Like, it's just weird. But, I mean, good for him.
You know, I am not in good shape, and I love the fact that dude is putting big boys on the radar here. But I'm not a heavyweight contender.
That's what I'm saying. So, I'm just saying, like, if you come into a job where clearly, like, a very important feature is that you're actually in good condition, and you show up 40, 50 pounds overweight, like, am I allowed to be like, well, wait a minute, like, part of the criterion is that you're actually training diligently? You know,
straight up.
Anyway, I'll lay off. Fair enough. But it's not fat shaming. I think he's awesome. I just kind of think he could be even better if he actually trained.
I agree. Well, one of the things that I had said last night while watching the broadcast was, you know, I tweeted the other day when they had more or less made Spence Porter kind of official. Like, they had been talking about it for, I think, a week or two. But nonetheless, they, you know, pretty much made it a thing the other day. And I had tweeted that Spence Porter is a good fight. It's a fight that, you know, you would expect to happen with premier boxing champions having the stable that they have and the possibilities of matchups that they have at welterweight specifically. But it's almost a fight you might have expected to happen like 2 years ago or something. Kind of like almost all of these welterweight matchups that PBC has put forth. And I mean, again, it's kind of you're walking a bit of a tightrope here because the matchups are good. I want these fights to happen. I don't want to discourage premier boxing champions from making these fights. Fights like Thurman Porter or fights like Garcia Porter or, you know, any of these types of fights that make sense and are good fights. But it's like they're holding out for these kinds of fights. Like, they're treating them like they're some sort of anomalous, weird thing. When these are literally, and I mean, I'm not being rude and I'm not trying to just say some crazy hot take shit. These are two contenders fighting each other in a deep weight class. They should do that. There's nothing special about that. There's nothing weird. This is boxing. And so to treat it any other way is kind of like moving the goalposts in the sense of what boxing fans should come to expect. And that's the problem. And that's exactly what you're talking about with the long-term health of the sport and how this potentially affects the long-term health of the sport. When you get these kinds of fights and it's like fighters are fighting two times a year and this is the big fight, like this is the big one. This is just a guy fighting a contender and that's the big fight. That's a problem. And so during the broadcast last night, they have this pre-produced 5-minute segment between Spence and Porter. And it's like, you know, they're delivering quotes. This is the fight of my life. I've been waiting for this. And then Porter says something to the effect of, you know, our paths have been, we've been on the same paths for this showdown for years now. And I'm like, huh? You have?
Yeah, it's terrible.
And my immediate thought is, no, Spence and Crawford are, and it's okay to say that shit. It's totally okay if you are Sean Porter to, you know, on your own behalf be like, look, guys, this isn't like the fight everybody's looking to see. And it's okay for me to just go on there and say, I'm looking to go in there and upset that fight from happening.
Well, but
there's
you
nothing
mentioned
wrong with
a name
that.
There that, but you mentioned a name there that I don't know who that is. What was the name of Spence and that other guy? What was his name?
Kramer?
No, I think it started with a C. Because I saw the PBC helped me because when they gave me a list of who the welterweight champions were, there's Errol Spence Jr., there's Sean Porter,
that's true.
There's Keith Thurman, there's Manny Pacquiao, and that's the only people, right? There's not another guy on that list who might legitimately.
And on top of that, they scrubbed Thurman from that little graphic after the fight. Like, they had this pre-made little graphic, like, top welterweights that Crawford's not on. And then after the fight, they edit out Thurman. I'm like, yo, dude. Come
Imagine
on.
Imagine the people doing that. Imagine leaving out Crawford. Like, well, we legitimately should include this guy. I mean, he is a champion. It would be professional courtesy to include him to, you know, the other people in the sport, you know, that he's connected with. No, just fuck him. Just leave him out. Nobody will care. And if they do, like, who gives a fuck? Like, I was like, how does this sport function this way? Like, no other sport would do this. No other sport would even conceive of doing this 50 years ago, and we're still here, where Crawford just does not exist.
It makes zero sense. And they do similar things on the other side, too. It's not just PBC, but it's just It's fresh in the mind because it just happened on PBC last night, so you got to call it out. I mean, come on, guys. The fans deserve better than that, and quite frankly, the fighters deserve better than that, if we're being real here. The fighters deserve to be challenged and deserved to expect to be challenged. Like, these aren't just little punk-ass dudes here, and we don't need to treat them as if they are. Like, these are fighters, and they should be expected to take on the best challenges.
Yeah, I mean, the only people who shouldn't is Mike Lee. I think Mike Lee deserves a light heavyweight title shot after that performance. I mean, it was such a gutsy performance when you think about it. And I deeply resented the class warfare of Glib Plant saying, this guy's never worked for the things that I've worked for. How dare you? How dare you challenge Mike Lee and the Lee family and, by extension, white privilege and patriarchy?
Well, you know what? The story might be that Mike Lee got knocked down 4 times, but the real story is that Mike Lee got up four times. Ba-boom!
In the words of Hunter S. Thompson, never question the essential decency of the white man's culture. That is what Mike Lee reinforces with his legacy. It is inspiring in Trump's America. I appreciate it. And
when you got a salt shaker full of Coke, that's just another, you know, symbolic element of white America right there.
God bless Glib Plant. And those were some fucking brutal shots that Mike Lee was taking. Oh, God. I'm gonna leave this alone. I can retire my vitriol for Mike Lee, but like that was a nice setup for Pacquiao because I am, as I think I've mentioned to listeners, I'm a morning person who gets up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It has been a challenge on the East Coast to stay up until 3 and 4 in the morning
for every one
of these fight cards that I love watching. But it is really hard for me as I enter my fifth decade to be like, oh, fuck, Subway for 2 hours to get home. Like, they just start so late. I don't know. Like, isn't it fun to, like, watch something that you really enjoy and you've got some of the day to, like, do stuff after? Not if you like boxing. Not if this is your game.
Man, I got 2 small kids. So it's like, you know, for me, even like for me, I stayed up and it's like almost midnight and I'm waning. I'm trying not to fall asleep, but like the East Coast is going hard. You guys are still talking and still raging on Twitter. And I'm like, huh, what's going on here? You guys got, I give you guys some props because, you know, the stuff starts this late, even just for the West Coast. You guys are crazy. And the folks over the pond too, the Brits staying up all the way till freaking like 6 in the morning and shit. Y'all are crazy.
Oh, you know what?
But
I wanted to bring up something with you is I saw in the lead up to the Pacquiao promotional thing, in the lead up to the fight, that he's singing with like his group of people, the entourage. They're now implementing the Neil Diamond thing during training, the Sweet Caroline. When did that happen?
Oh, God, dude. I don't know. But it's like Bill Murray says in What About Bob? There are two kinds of people in this world. People who love Neil Diamond and people who hate Neil Diamond. And my ex-wife loved him. I can't stand Neil Diamond, dude. So anytime they play that song, I'm just like tuning out. Nope.
Just on the basis of anti-Semitism, or you have some sort of artistic objection?
No, I just don't like him. It's just not my stuff. Nah,
I don't even know anything about
anti-Semitism. That just boosts it, in my opinion. They fuck off, then.
No, he's Jewish. It's not that he is anti-Semitic and you're objecting to his anti-Semitism.
Oh, well,
I was questioning if you had a...
No. No, I thought you were saying like he'd made anti-Semitic... Like,
no, I know.
I didn't even know he's Jewish. Jesus.
Not only is he Jewish, he's the Jewish Elvis by legend.
Well, speaking of people who paint with really broad brush strokes in a bigoted way, Mr. Manny Pacquiao, where does he go from here?
I was talking about this too because we're trying to figure it out because I was watching the fight with Kurt Emhoff, hosted very graciously by Dr. Johnny Lapps, and we were saying, is it Amir Khan? Is the Mayweather thing, is it just so lucrative that they cannot make this happen? But I feel like Khan is just the fight that makes the most sense because I think Pacquiao would feel very encouraged about what he could do in terms of how well he would look. Big money if it's in God knows where. I mean, Saudi Arabia, Dubai. But, I mean, Mayweather was at this fight. Mayweather went into the ring, I think, before it started, like around the time of the national anthem. Are they seeding that? Like, I mean, is this them sort of tipping their hand about what they want to do with it? I don't know. But, I mean, is there any reason to think that Mayweather can't just do exactly what he did last time? Or do we think that he slipped enough with the McGregor performance and the performance in Japan that maybe without VADA testing, that this version of Pacquiao can Mighty Mouse his way into redemption and hand the first loss to Pacquiao or to Mayweather? And is that the narrative that would drive it to achieve some semblance of the pay-per-view numbers of before? I don't know. I think Khan though makes the most sense. I don't think Mayweather wants to come out of retirement, especially not with how good Pacquiao looked here.
Now that's an interesting take. I mean, realistically, it's tough because at some point you do have to consider that Mayweather's going to hit a wall himself physically. I mean, I have no idea, but you know, it's at what point is Floyd Mayweather watching something like this and thinking, that's just maybe a little bit too much risk? Because you do have to consider on some level, was Floyd Mayweather going to come out and fight Keith Thurman? No. And not because necessarily he's afraid of Keith Thurman or anything like that, but even just on the basis of, like, nah, too much risk. Like, he's too young, a little too fast, you know, hits just hard enough. And on top of that, probably not quite enough money to be made from that. So that's, you know, I think how Floyd reacts to this win is probably going to determine what Manny does next. And maybe that sounds like unfair to Manny, who is still legitimately a superstar. But frankly, Floyd Mayweather can do whatever he wants. He's got the win, first of all. And second of all, he's still a bigger name. He's still a bigger star. Whether I don't even like the guy, but I'm just putting it how it is. So what he decides to do is going to determine. It's a massive gravitational force here. So if Floyd goes, we're good. I already got the win, and I'm not going to do that. And he doesn't seem interested at all, then they probably are going to move on to something like Khan. Because that's probably a pretty big money fight. But if there's
he doesn't want anything to do with Spence. I mean, neither Pacquiao or Mayweather want. That's a suicide for both those guys. So I just think
that's not a good idea. Or Crawford, like, you know, he's across the street anyway. But yeah, those don't make sense. Manny didn't want that shit 2.5 years ago. He doesn't want it now. So
and I don't want it. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, that doesn't make. I would rather see Manny taking on these kind of like that second and third tier at welterweight and just leave those two guys to battle it out among themselves, because that's how it should be, you know? I don't know. Going forward, needless to say, that first, we've talked about this at length, that first Mayweather-Pacquiao fight was a cynical, money-making piece of shit, and the second would probably be 1-2. But I hate to say it, probably less so. And I would probably be far more interested in a rematch from the perspective of who's going to win than the first fight. Because like I said, I don't know. You know, Floyd Mayweather hasn't been in the ring in a while, so we don't actually know what he looks like. And without knowing that, we can only assume so much. So, damn, I'm almost talking myself into watching this. This is awful. Why?
No, the first one was so dreadful. I would like Pacquiao to have that opportunity to have a better result. I would like Mayweather to be put in this place with a loss, given how he, you know, brilliantly marketed himself. But I think it did a lot of damage to the sport, creating, you know, lining his wallet, while at the same time leaving a list of fights that, like, nobody has ever talked about rewatching because of how fun they were to watch. And I just hate that business model. It's like, you know, a movie that a trailer sells you on that you're really excited to see, and you're unbelievably disappointed with the result. And that sort of became his thing, is maybe this guy can beat me, and then plays tag for 12 rounds, which he's better at than anybody. So I'd like Pacquiao, who I think is going to be a tremendously damaged person as a result of what he gave to boxing, to have that on his legacy. And also Mayweather, just to the way that I think he's been disrespectful to people that ultimately had better legacies than him, and just say the only thing that counts is the zero, to show you that I'm the greatest ever. And I don't like that, and I don't like how persuasive that's become and how useful it's become for leveraging his business model and all that. But, I mean, that's all just my own petty bias stuff. I think the fight would be boring. I think Mayweather would probably still be able to beat him. But, you know, like we saw with Thurman, age versus inactivity, at least Pacquiao's been active and was able to, you know, do something that he shouldn't have been able to do. And how much of that was a result of Thurman's just the inactivity of 2 years of just barely fighting and not being what he was in his prime, even though, you know, he's still at a very high level. And Pacquiao, I think, also is still at a very high level, but it's just I feel worried watching Pacquiao now. And I wouldn't feel worried about him fighting Mayweather, because I don't think Mayweather is going to hurt him. I just think that Mayweather just stylistically, is it a bad matchup for him now. Although, like, I totally feel that the Pacquiao who beat Cotto beats Mayweather at any point of his, you know, peak Mayweather. I think that that which is why I think Mayweather didn't fight him at that time. I just think that Pacquiao was, I'm not saying I guarantee he would beat him. I just think he was very capable of beating him at that point. Because to do that to a Hall of Famer like Cotto, that kind of dominance, yeah, I think Mayweather saw it and said, I don't want any part of this. So it's a tricky one. I was very excited to go to Pacquiao Mayweather, but within 10 seconds, it's like, oh, your worst expectations are going to be met here.
Yeah, and you know, doing it a second time, I guess, is kind of like going to be like going back to the scene of a crime or something like that. But there's so much money there. I wouldn't be surprised if they pursued it, but obviously not my cup of tea. Was there anything on the undercard that really ticked much for you? It didn't really do much for me, I'll tell you that much. But yeah. I don't know. Did you catch the DAZN card from earlier in the day at all?
No, I wasn't able to.
Gotcha.
What did you see that you liked?
I mean, it was mostly a kind of a showcase type of thing for what's his name, Derek Chisora, and then it was supposed to have been a less difficult fight for Dillian Whyte, but he had a bit of a struggle against a Colombian slugger. Rivas was his name. I can't remember his first name offhand.
He got dropped, right? Whyte got dropped briefly.
Yeah, he got muscled around. He had a real tough time. And the funny thing is, and I say this pretty much every time it happens, man, beware a South American who can punch and is undefeated, has a pretty good knockout record. I mean, every single time, dude, watch out for these guys. Don't take those guys as in-between tune-up fights. Just don't do it, man. But, yeah, he had a rough time, and he got through it. But I think after the fight, a lot of people were jumping off the Dillian Whyte train, but Derek Chisora scored like a horrific knockout over our boy Artie Spielka, Mr. Wang Tuxedo at the weigh-in, one of our favorites, but he scored like an absolutely horrific knockout over that dude with like a series of, I think he hurt him with the right hand and then finished him off with like three left hooks, two of which should never even have been thrown. But the referee just kind of was standing there. It was bad, real bad. But anyway, it was actually a fairly fun card in my opinion. And not to, I guess, get off of the beat PBC down and talk crap about ESPN Plus, and then immediately be like, DAZN, you're my boy. But they have been, in my opinion, doing very well with the World Boxing Super Series. They've put on a bunch of kind of local fight cards. I've not had any streaming issues whatsoever with them. I'm kind of liking this DAZN business thus far. I still don't like the factions of the promoters and all that shit. But anyway, yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a fun card. And yesterday was, you know, apart from the rest of that pay-per-view card, overall a pretty good day of boxing.
I'm a huge fan of the Super Series. I mean, I think that should be in every division. And, like, that's a really clever, I mean, pretty obvious, straightforward way to produce the best fights and the best champions. And, yeah. I mean, and plus I fucking hated, in the Pacquiao Thurman thing, the WBA champion and the super champion. Like, all that fucking, the belt stuff still just drives me crazy. Canelo is a franchise champion, so even if he gets beaten, like, the title isn't on the line. Like, get the fuck out of here, come on.
Yeah, like I said, one of the funny things about last night was that Keith Thurman was supposed to be like the champion or whatever, and he walked out first and all that type of stuff was not observed.
That
and
was
the
dumb.
The comment I made was that all of this alphabet shit is so stupid that not even PBC's buying into it. I mean,
right.
You know, like, it's just a joke. All of it's just a joke.
What do we have to look forward to? Like, for you, is there anything left in the summer that you're really jazzed about, or the fall?
Well, let's see. Next week is the Gervonta Davis fight on Showtime, and our boy Yuriorkis Gamboa is fighting in the co-feature on that. On DAZN, it's Maurice Hooker and Tevin Farmer co-featuring. Let's see. Actually, I will say one fight that I am kind of looking forward to, mostly out of kind of a sick curiosity, and it will probably be good from an entertainment standpoint, but everything else is trash, is actually Adam Konacki versus Chris Areola. I mean, it's a two heavyweights. Chris Areola is easily well past whatever he had, but they're two guys who can punch and are basically going to come forward and throw. Could be sloppy fun.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, there's not really like a ton on the schedule that, you know, gets me going. At least not stuff that's been finalized. I think they just, like, in the last couple of days, finalized Lomachenko versus Luke Campbell, which is, I guess, somewhat interesting. But Luke Campbell has pretty clear limitations, so I'm not, you know, not that jazzed about that. I think we know who will probably win. But, I mean, there are several scheduled fight cards with no fights made yet on them. And actually, something to ask you about, somewhat interesting that Canelo backed off the Mexican Independence Day weekend fight card, which is the first time in several years that Golden Boy has not at least tried to be involved in that weekend. You know, first it was Floyd pretty much monopolizing that weekend, and then Canelo took it.
Sure.
So that's kind of interesting.
What do you make of that? That is a very odd thing, just given just how unbelievably marketable that date has been demonstrated to be.
Well, I personally think that, first of all, it's kind of stupid, because not that anybody backed off it per se, but it's stupid because presumably the idea is that, well, the time's too short and Canelo can't put in a training camp in that time and blah, 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 where it's like, dude, we got like 9 weeks or something. That's plenty of time. But, you know, this is kind of something that I've talked about recently too, with the links of training camps now that are just absurd. I mean, and half of the training camp at least is dedicated to cutting weight anyway, and not even actual boxing training. So it's kind of like, you know, you stay in shape, you don't have to worry about long training camps, and you could be more busy and blah, blah, blah. This is a big circle. We all know this. So that part of it is kind of absurd. But on top of that, I think that reading into it a little more, it's an indication, in my opinion, that DAZN is pressing Golden Boy and Canelo based on the fact that he got $300-something million for that deal, that, look, dude, like, you need to actually fight a really big opponent in this next fight, especially if it's going to be that weekend. So it sounds like they very legitimately tried to get Sergey Kovalev for that weekend, but Kovalev was already roped into a deal fighting in Russia. So that was not going to happen. And I appreciate that Golden Boy and Canelo sounded like they made a good faith effort to make that fight happen, because that would have been a damn interesting fight. And I'm not entirely sure I would have picked Canelo for that. But it didn't happen. And so it sounds like the only other alternative for a bigger fight would have been a third Golovkin fight. And the real shitty thing here is that that fight could be made pretty much at any time if Golden Boy and Canelo decided they wanted to make it, because that's just the nature of how much power they wield in this situation. And instead, they're choosing to fuck Golovkin over because they're so vagina stung, so butthurt over whatever he said, or the fact that fans think Canelo lost at least once, if not twice, and they would rather just, you know, scorched earth that shit and not give him anything like a third fight and back off of that date rather than go ahead and make that third fight, which I think is shite. And I also think it's shite that there's a large percentage of media and fans that are like, we don't want to see that third fight. That's just stupid. And I'm like, first of all, what other fucking options are there? Second of all, both the first two fights were really good. I mean,
yeah.
And thirdly, like, nothing happened in the second fight that would make you think the third fight would be a total piece of shit. So I don't really understand what the problem is. And instead, now the alternative is Canelo's going to have to wait possibly another 6 months to fight, because they could try to make a fight in December. But I don't really see what changes from the time frame unless they really start pursuing a fight now. So I don't know. I guess fans and media got what they wanted. They got not Canelo Golovkin 3, but now we got nothing. So good for you guys.
Super frustrating. I agree with you. I thought every round of Golovkin Canelo was tense. Like, I was very, very engaged for every round, like, and just feeling edgy. And like that's always a sign of just like really good chemistry between a couple of elite fighters. And it seems like Golovkin is just with age sliding a little bit. So I think maybe it gets ever more dangerous. I even found like the contentiousness with who won added to my feeling related to them having a third fight, because
right.
I think it's very reasonable, like whatever side you fall on. There's no robbery on either side. So yeah.
Right. It was they were two close, good fights. And I don't see there being anything wrong with that. And I mean, of course I'm like the history dude that's whining about, yeah, well, you know, so and so fought 17 times back in 1914, you know. I'm not dumb. I know that can't happen now, but still, it's just kind of stupid to see these kinds of tactics coming from fighters and their promoters, where they're like, well, if it's not going to be us, then fuck everybody type of shit. Man, come on, dude.
It's bad. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think Canelo and Kovalev is a really interesting fight, super dangerous fight. And I think that would certainly elevate his profile within boxing, but I don't know if it really elevates his profile outside of boxing to beat Kovalev. Does a casual fan go, oh my
right.
God, this Canelo is unreal?
Nah.
I doubt it. I mean, because if Ward and Kovalev does absolutely nothing and they have a great, very interesting, dramatic first fight and it gets a fraction of the support for their rematch, it kind of tells me that, like, Kovalev is not your guy. You're trying to put yourself over. And by the way, Canelo doesn't need to be put over. He's the most marketable athlete in boxing right now, if Mayweather stays out. So, yeah, I think you're right that it's just ego bullshit with him throwing his muscle around to Golovkin, where else can Golovkin go to really make serious money for himself or for anybody? Because I just don't. Clearly, Canelo has all the cards, and he's flexing with this. But it's not a flex that's good. Like it's annoying,
exactly.
And it's petty, and ugh.
Yeah, and yeah, it's a dick measuring contest, and great. Like your dick's bigger, cool, good for you. But then now what?
Yeah,
you know, like what is it? It screws over everybody, and it's stupid. So I don't know. I mean. I think that the fact that he backed off the date is probably indicative that DAZN is pressing for a big fight, and they're like, you know, we're not seeing that much return for our $300 million investment here, and we need to see something pretty quick. And regardless of, you know, that's still on the table. That point is very much still there from DAZN, and there's got to be some sort of pressure on their part. They're like, okay, dude, days are going by. You know, we're looking at our watch, and you need to figure something out. So, I don't know what they're going to figure out, but that is going to be big news and going to be a big determining factor in a lot of other things with DAZN coming up pretty quickly here.
Right. I mean, the big fight to save all the boxing I'm seeing on social media is we finally need Gamboa Wanma. I completely agree with that sentiment. Gamboa.
Yeah, man.
Can be the salvation to the sport. That the sport's really, you know, what Tyson did in terms of resuscitating the heavyweight division, I see that's Gamboa Wanma at this stage.
Man, they really marinated the hell out of that fight. Now wasn't just marination, you know, that was like they're smoking it, then they're injecting it, then they're crapping it out, and then they're snorting it, and yeah, that's an incredible fight.
It's just kind of like what you're saying. I mean, it reminds me, you have this great talent with somebody like Crawford. What's the next 3 years of Crawford's career? What are the great fights that he's about to have? We have no idea, right? Like, who the fuck wants to fight him because he's so good? So what does he do?
he just like people are just going to have to wait until he slows down enough to make it sort of competitive for like big names to want to fight him. And that's when it makes you like want to have some sort of oversight where people are a little bit pushed into stuff for the good of the sport. And you don't get a lot of Crawfords. I mean, how many Crawfords pop up every 10 years?
Yeah.
Not many.
No, it's the exact same point, just with another person, and because of the promotional, you know, idiocy, and not because of somebody's just wanting to screw someone else over. Well, I mean, it could be that on the promotional level too. But Crawford is an incredible talent, and not just incredible talent, but he executes, and he's a very, very, very good fighter. And to again know that there's one of these situations where the timing's right for these two fighters, you don't get to see two. I mean, and being undefeated doesn't mean nearly as much, and I don't want to beat a dead horse about the undefeated thing, but it is interesting that you have two undefeated fighters in the same weight class that are both ridiculously talented and skilled and both in their prime, and we might miss it. You know, that's a crime, dude. That's some sort of boxing crime.
It's shitty. The sport needs to get out of its own way with a lot of this stuff. It just really does, because it's... Just anytime I talk to people who love boxing for, like, the great fights, but really don't tune in or follow outside of that, and it's like they're the gaps of memory are years from when they tune in. And I'm kind of like, wow, like, there's been a lot of really good fights the last 5 years, but it's just – it's a sport that just completely depends on junkies. You know, it just – it knows there's just these people, whatever they do to piss them off, we're just stuck. And it's frustrating. I'm just kind of shocked that nobody has ever really been able to come in. I mean, even like the Super Series thing. Super Series is very popular amongst boxing fans. Have you ever heard a non-boxing fan mention that it exists? I haven't.
No, and on top of that – yeah, despite its popularity within the boxing, you know, sphere, they're having all sorts of difficulty with it at every turn, too. Like,
yep.
Almost every single fight has been in jeopardy until the last moment because of, you know, contractual issues and location issues. And, I mean, putting together tournaments, this is one of the reasons why they don't do it. I love them.
Right.
Because, for obvious reasons, but this is one of the reasons why they don't.
And look at, like, Donaire wanting Inoue, calling him out. Let's fight. Oh, it's not going to happen. Well, I guess what's the point of me staying in this fucking thing? Not good.
Yeah.
Not good, you know.
Yeah.
If like, that's a thrilling fight to watch. And that would be such a spectacle to showcase the Super Series. And now, as boxing does, the fights that don't happen become the ones that they become remembered for, as opposed to the fights that do happen more often than not. And the Super Series is following in that legacy. It's trying to like get around boxing, and yet it reverts back to the mean of what boxing produces, which is
exactly,
you know, frustration, annoyance, and just throwing up your hands.
Throwing up something anyway.
Throwing
yeah,
up something.
Man, it's nauseating. But despite that, we'll be here. We'll be watching, and I hope some stuff does develop for later this year, because there are a lot of open-ended TV dates and whatnot, and they'll fill them, I'm sure. I just hope they don't get filled with stuff we don't want, but we know better.
Yeah, and I mean, if Terrence Crawford wants to step in to fight Mike Lee, I'm for it.
Well, you chase greatness or you don't.
Yeah, I mean, you can have the foot-long bun, or you can go for a wrap. It's up to you.
Well, I'm just waiting for Crawford to give him the cold cut combo.
There you go. Nice.
Had to recover it somehow. Well, anyway, we'll figure out another way to be back and talk about some more boxing bull jive pretty soon. I'm sure there will be more stuff for us to talk about. But Brent, in the meanwhile, always a fun time, and Senator Manny Pacquiao, congrats to him.
I'm going to go out because I think we won over a lot of fans with Neil Diamond. Oh, I was trying to line up a YouTube video of Neil Diamond crackling Rosie.
And you got ads.
I got ads, so let's just leave it alone. I fucked up.
That's symbolic of what we got going on here. So, perfect.
Kind of is.
Well, everybody, thanks so much for listening in. I don't know why you listened in this long if you did. You're about as sick as we are, but thank you. If you are on Twitter and would like to follow us there, follow Bryn at Brynicio, Brynicio. Follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. And if you're on Facebook, go to Facebook, find the Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page. Give that a like. And I don't know the whole deal with iTunes. I know they're dismantling it, but there are several other podcast platforms that you could give us ratings on and whatnot and subscribe. We appreciate that. And one last thing, my buddy Aris Pina and I are going to be back very soon with some history stuff. We got some stuff cooking, and it's going to be awesome. Bryn, that's it, man.
All right, Cracklin' Rose to take us out.
Do it.
Get on board. We gonna ride till there ain't no.
That's it. Bye.